Have you heard about the new MagnaGrip Pro Nozzle? The MagnaGrip Pro Nozzle is the easiest, most advanced nozzle ever, protecting you from the dangers of diesel exhaust fumes. With its patented flex magnet technology, the Pro Nozzle easily attaches with one hand from a standing position, can snap on from any angle, and fits flush to the apparatus, saving a ton of space. And MagnaGrip is the only exhaust removal system that offers a true 100% seal. For free grant assistance and to learn more, go to MagnaGrip.com.
This fire engineering podcast is made possible by Tenkata Protective Fabrics. The global leader in flame-resistant fabrics, Tenkata Protective Fabrics enables millions of people worldwide to be great at what they do. Generations of industry professionals serving in the fire service, industrial, and military industries rely on Tenkata fabrics for safety, comfort, and confidence. From the harshest working conditions to the welcoming site of home, Tenkata recognizes the people they're protecting are unique individuals whose lives extend beyond work. Supporting a world of evolving needs, Tenkata's innovations lead the way in user-centric design, technology, and sustainability around the globe. To learn more, please visit TenkataFabrics.com.
Well, good evening and welcome to another edition of Fire and Training. I'm your host, Douglas Klein, and I'm looking forward to tonight's show talking about a topic that I haven't heard very much of, but exists across our world, especially the United States and all over the world. But we're going to get into a series on this same topic about resort fire ground operations and how we have to prepare for that and what type of training that goes into that, plus fire ground considerations. So we're going to dive into, like I said, a multiple series of conversations and on this type of topic. And I do want to stress that to our listeners out there, we want you to join in and be a part of this conversation. Our guest call in is 760-454-8852. And I would be remiss to say, if I didn't say, that fire and training is dedicated to the men and women who are in the streets working 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, responding to a multitude of calls, taking care of our citizens, and ultimately doing the things that we love to do, and that's take care of people. So let's dive into the first part of this topic. This is going to be somewhat of an introduction program to resort fire ground operations and to resort fire ground operations and the training that is dedicated to that. This conversation came up back in October, having the opportunity to sit with Chief Halton, and we were in the Grand Strand as he was here for the South Carolina Chiefs Association, and we began talking about what was actually existing in resorts and the many different types of resorts that existed along the coast and the mountains, along the plains, from coast to coast, from north to south, all over the world. There are so many different types of resorts that we really just needed to dive into those types of resorts and to begin talking about those type of products that we're going to be responding to, the types of buildings we're going to respond to. You know, one of the things that I do know is today's fire ground is not the same fire ground that I responded to back in 79 when I started, or even in the 80s, even in the 90s and the early part of the 2000s. We've undergone so many changes, and in the responses that we do, the fire service has changed as well. However, I can truly say that I think that we still have a lot of work that needs to be done, and things are rapidly changing. One of the things that I know is that the rate of change that we're going to see in the next 10 years is more than what we've seen in the last. It'll be a faster rate of change than what we've seen in the last 50 years. These days, as we plan our attacks on scene of these structures, as we begin doing pre-incident surveys, as we begin you know, preparing our folks, training our folks for what exists, you know, we must consider all those challenges that we face, not only on the modern fire ground, but what's changing in building construction and what's happening in the renovation of many of these buildings. And I know we've talked a lot on this show and collaborated with Chris Nahm on taking it to the streets and talking about building construction in a lot of different venues and types of buildings and airs and vintage. But one of the things that we really have to start narrowing down is that for years we thought that the fire service fought the majority of the fires in buildings constructed with solid dimensional lumber. And some of our resorts still exist that have these air and vintages of solid dimensional lumber. And they're in a combination with, you know, true masonry construction, you know, some of the components that we see today in the modern resorts that are going up, the condominiums that are popping up, you know, all over the Grand Strand area where I'm at, and, of course, in many other resorts areas up and down the east and the west coast. They're very quick-built, engineered-style systems that go into play. Some of these have, you know, good modern fire protection systems in them. Some of them are built to where they don't require that by code, but we're looking at it. So what type of resorts do we really have to start thinking about? In conversation that we were having, and I began just looking around Air Response District, you know, we have type one high rises, and some of these type one high rises are 40, 50 stories high. You have the inability to get a ladder truck close to them because of the parking garages, because of the other buildings that surround them, the fact that there could be a beach on the what would be the Charlie side of the building. We just can't get good access for apparatus to those types of buildings. And that creates a challenge. We also go and think about, well, we got these small 3, 4, 5, 6-story resort-type places that, you know, exist. And, you know, it might be easier to get access from one side or maybe two sides with an aerial device or positioning of you know, pumpers, those type of things. And then we could switch to, we go to some of the areas in, say, Gatlinburg, Tennessee, or Pigeon Forge, Tennessee, and we've got this resort area, and it's cabins. It's single-family dwellings, or, you know, which could be small, which could be medium-sized, which could be, you know, relatively large size, up to the 5, 6,000, 7,000 square foot size homes that sleep 20 people and have game rooms, have, you know, indoor bowling alleys, all kinds of things that we get into that are challenges. So when we think about, you know, the constant battles that we go up against, we don't think resort responses. We think typical, we're responding to a single family, or we're responding to a high rise. There's a lot more that goes into the resort concept. And part of what I think that goes into that is the amount of people that may be there, the challenges of being able to gain access because of traffic. You know, or, you know, what we're really beginning to see is more and more as resort communities are on the growth, the changes that are going in place. Many of these changes are changing from the typical high rise that you might see along the coast to resort areas that are popping up that, you know, may have 5, 6, 7-story buildings, but there's multiple amounts of these buildings, 10, 12, 20, 30 of these type of condos that are going in that are in a geographic area. One of the places I think about is in the center part of the coastline and in the Grand Strand and the Lake Arrowhead area for us is that we have a place called Kingston Plantation. Lots of 3- and 4-story wood frame condominiums that exist. Very difficult to access because of not only the positioning of the buildings, the limitations in the parking lot, but also the tree covers and the foliage that exists there. So there's a lot of challenges that go to that. also think about in the mountain areas, like if you go to Vail and or out in the Colorado area around the ski resorts, or you go into Vermont or Maine or those type of places along the coastline up to the ski resorts there. We go out into California. There's so much that exists in resort areas that we have to take into consideration. We have to be thinking about. And how do we get folks prepared? Well, one of the first things that I know we have to be doing is looking at pre-incident surveys and you know, really looking at what we're up against and what we're not up against. You know, that's a challenge that we have to look at. So as we begin talking about this challenge, if you're listening live and you'd like to call in, that number is 760-454-8852. Again, 760-454-8852. Would love to get you to join in on the conversation. Once you're in the green room, press 1, and we will get you up on the show. So let's start diving in, and we're going to talk about mountain resorts. We're going to talk about plain resorts. We're going to talk about a variety of these different resorts along the coastlines and what's the difference between East Coast and West Coast. What's the difference in the Gulf Coast? You know, what's the difference of being on one of the Great Lakes in a resort? You know, what's the difference between the Rocky Mountains and the Appalachian Mountains? We're going to talk about this in a series of shows that go forward, bringing in some of the folks that live in those areas and talk about the expertise that they have so that we're sharing with you. Part of what I really want to hit on tonight is a concept or a focus of what do we need to be thinking or how do we begin changing our mindsets towards resort responses. Well, I think the first thing of it is we have to realize that these exist and have a lot of potential for challenges on fire grounds. And in fact, one of the things that I want people to begin thinking about is the manpower that it may require to be able to do some of the operations. You know, a good example I take, Windsor Green, that we had a fire out, 29 condo buildings. And again, 29 condo buildings that had multiple buildings in there. They were condos. It is somewhat like a resort, but it's like inland a ways. So you've got pools, you're near golf courses, you have all this. So, you know, when you have some of these buildings, and this was from a wildland urban interface fire, and it was very rapid spread. There were some wind-driven fire conditions that were in there. Some of the other pieces that added to the rapid spread of fire was the type of exterior siding that was on the building, the vinyl siding. There was landscaping that was the pine straw. All this is very ignitable. So that changed the dimension of how the thought process went when first arriving crews were getting there. Part of the challenges were the evacuation of people. And this is different from, you know, 2-3-4-story condos to what's in a high rise or a mid rise of how you get the folks out and the challenges of daytime versus nighttime. These are the things that we need to be thinking about, and how do we train our folks to be thinking or forward thinking on what are we going to have to do and how are we going to have to do that? Well, it comes back to actually really getting out and pre-planning your area, knowing your buildings, knowing the fire suppression systems, knowing the alarm systems, knowing the accesses, knowing where the roof hatches are so that you can control the stairwells with pressurization for evacuation, controlling the stairwells for fire ground operations or fire attack. We also need to understand, you know, how we're going to place our apparatus, where we're going to place our apparatus, what apparatus are really needed, how many are needed, and based upon the resort you're going to, what level of training do we need to get our folks to? You know, a lot of people, you know, think about resorts and they think about high rises automatically. And again, we've already said that was not necessarily the case. So how do we go about preparing our folks? Well, I think the first thing that we have to do is identify exactly what's in your area, because these are target hazards. And these target hazards, you need to really get out and begin analyzing and studying them to see exactly what it's going to take. Some of the fuel loading that's in these buildings that are not sprinklered even are very, very challenging. And a good example of some of these buildings that you get into are not modern constructed like we're thinking, but these are older buildings, resorts that, you know, have been around for a number of years. And I think about some of those being in the Asheville, North Carolina area of, you know, where you're at in these type of buildings that exist there in the resorts. And some of the challenges that go with that for them being on the side of a mountain. I think about the times that I've had the opportunity to be in Vermont and going to those communities. And we don't really think about a resort being a bed and breakfast, but in fact, that is somewhat of a resort where people go. And they're designed differently. Some of these are in, you know, very old homes. We see some of the same type of resort activities that exist in some of the older buildings that are in like Gatlinburg. And then we also see some that are definitely like that when we go into Gettysburg as well. So it's all across the country that we're seeing many, many different types of resorts that we have to get into. So again, part of what we have to be very astute to is the types of building construction that we're dealing with. And when we start thinking about that, it's how long do we have for operational time? How fast can we deploy our lines? And this goes back to one of the conversations we had on the show about benchmarking. And we were very in-depth about benchmarking and when do you actually try to mark your times for how long you've been operating. And, you know, one of the things that we began talking about on that show was that the time of dispatch is when we begin our benchmarking time. If it takes us 8 minutes, 10 minutes, 12 minutes, whatever it takes to get to the scene, you know, that's time lapsed or time of degradation on that building or, you know, the growth of the fire. How much can it grow in that time? How much does it, you know, take the building and make it even more unstable because of the degradation by fire? Our operational time period, how long does it take for us once arrival on the scene, benchmarking till we can actually get hose lines in place and water on the fire? These are things that we need to be thinking about or training on when it comes to these resorts, because each resort is different. And you're going to have to get out and actually stretch lines. That was one of the conversations, you know, that I heard in several of the programs at the Fire Rescue Conference in South Carolina this last week. I heard Rick Lasky talking about it. I heard John Saka talking about it. Jonas Smith talking about it. You know, all these folks are saying some of the same things that, you know, we really need to be doing. Chief Ray was saying some things about it from Durham. You know, how well are we at deploying hose lines? And especially if we got to deploy hose lines and go up one, two, three, four, however many floors we've got to do to get to that particular area of the fire. That's one of the things in training that we really have to do. What happens when we have to start forcing doors and trying to gain access? I know that staying in some of the resorts that I've had the opportunity, you know, to stay in up around Asheville, those doors are solid wooden doors. And they're not going to force as easy as some of the newer design doors that exist. If you have a metal door, a true metal door on some of these older style resort hotels, those type of things are going to challenge you. So you have to get your people that are versed in that. And I know it sounds like we're going back to regular fire ground operations. We're talking about some of the same topics, but the complexities that you get into are specifically associated to that design of a resort. Some of these buildings that I think about trying to get to require you oftentimes to have like a courtyard that you have to actually try to lay hose into, or you have to try to deploy ladders into to be able to do operations. That's a challenge that we have to be looking at. As we continue to go through many of these different concepts and philosophies as we do each show. And we're going to break each show down to specific types of resorts in specific types of areas so that we can be very detailed. And again, I want to bring in the best of the best to talk about those type of resort areas and how they function in those. People that respond to those on a regular basis, people that understand the building construction, and people that understand, you know, how you do pre-incident planning for that and develop your people so that they're going to be successful in their operations. So, again, coming back to some of the training, I don't think that we take that into consideration enough. Many of these resorts that we go into or have to operate in are relatively large. That means they have large open areas. They have convention centers. They have restaurants. You know, they have gift shops. They have multiple indoor pools, which is a challenge in itself with a fire and potentially getting into chemicals. You know, that's a whole nother story that's there. And again, some of the areas that have resorts are impacted by the weather on a regular basis. Again, along the coastlines, it's nothing to have, you know, 10-mile-an-hour winds or that breeze that's always blowing off the ocean or off the lake, you know, that exists. And that gives you some wind-driven fire conditions. You know, part of what I think about that comes to mind is I had an opportunity to be in Missouri out at the lake at the instructors conference, and we were in a big resort. One of the challenges that would exist in that resort is all the dock space that exists and the mooring that existed for boats. That's a whole nother challenge in resorts that exist that, you know, are right near where there are people living. Some of the resorts that you go to are actually those resorts that are boats, that people are living on the boats or are actually visiting on the boats and staying there or using them and then coming back in and docking them. So that's a whole nother concept that we have to be thinking about that we may not normally think about. We do have resorts around our area that have, you know, docks and boats that are stored there. And, you know, it's a unique challenge. And, again, it's long stretches of hose lines and deployment of hose lines. And even integrating the operations in some of these resort areas like we have is a fireboat. I think about some of the challenges that exist, you know, out in like Lake Tahoe around those resorts and Incline Village. There's uniquenesses to each resort that we're going to have to really break down and get into. And, you know, pretty much as we start thinking about this or we start diving into it, that's where each group is going to be with its own show. And we will probably spend a 3 to 6 part series on this, depending on how much we want to integrate certain resorts with each other as we go forward. The vision is probably to have 4 to 6 of these conversations, you know, throughout the next year or so, or over the next couple of years, and in resort firefighting. Again, let's go back and think about how many folks have actually, even in your departments, if you're in a resort area, have actually participated in fire ground operations on a resort or in any of your resorts. How frequently do you run these calls? And a lot of times I think we're getting very complacent in the fact that we don't, and we're over-relying on the fire protection systems. And do we really understand those fire protection systems? And one of the things that comes out into my mind is how we're actually deploying our hose lines on standpipe systems. At one point in time, there was a 65 PSIs is how it was, you know, pressure regulated to that. Now it's 100 PSI in the new modern buildings when they're putting in these systems. But do you know which system has what? Have you actually put gauges and flowed your standpipe system? You know, how well does their fire pump work? How, you know, how restricted you know, is that system? How much do you have to do to support that system? Those are things that we need to be out doing more training of when we have that opportunity. Now, I understand a lot of resorts don't want you in there doing that type of activity. You know, sometimes in an off season, you're able to be able to get in there and work with the resorts and develop a relationship so that you can do that training. But, you know, that's just one of those concepts that, you know, we have to actually realize the need for. And we have to get out and do more of that training. So circling back around, how many of you folks actually have any real experience in responding to fires in resorts or emergencies in resorts? And, you know, one of the things that we'll talk about is not necessarily just fire-related responses, but the other types of responses that you could be doing, such as the medical responses, water rescue responses that exist within some of the resorts, things that could go along with hazmat, with your pools and various other components. So we have to be thinking in a different dimension as far as our responses to it. It's not just fire ground responses. It's all hazard responses that we may have to go to. Many of these resorts have activities that go on. I know recently in our resort area, we had the Country Music Festival. I know that some of the resorts actually have other activities and conferences and events that could draw, you know, terroristic activities, just like what happened in Las Vegas, you know, a few years back. So some of that is all the responses that we need to be thinking about, not only just fire ground, but an all-hazards approach to those style of responses. So that's kind of where we're going to kick off. Tonight's show is going to be much shorter than the other shows. It's kind of an introduction to what we're going to be doing and the focus that's coming. We're going to talk with the experts that exist in these areas. That's the game plan. I don't want to give away who we have yet. I want to put out the surprise element when we start talking about the different ones and the actual guests that we're going to have on the show. It is going to be a great cadre of guests that we bring in to actually talk about these areas and you know, specifically to the geographic regions and some of the challenges that we have that go with that, and also some folks that are pretty well-versed when we talk about high-rise operations, because some of our resorts that we see in all across the United States and in the world are high-rise resorts. So I hate to make it kind of just a generic show to get started, but yet I just want to introduce where we're going and what we're going to be doing over the next little bit with our shows, probably 3 to 6 shows, as I said before, with great, great guests. One of the things I do want to throw out is we're one day away from needing to have your submissions into FDIC 2023. If you have not done that, you can go to FDIC.com, go underneath the conference, click on the button of submit a proposal, and get your proposal in. I encourage everyone who has a program that you've developed, it's got good information in it, to make sure that you go in and submit into FDIC to be able to present your program. There's a lot of folks that have a lot of great information, and that's what FDIC is about. I want to thank Magna Grip and Tin Cape for their sponsorship of the show. It is an honor and a privilege for that. To have them as a sponsorship for fire and training. I also want to thank the great folks at Fire Engineering and the folks behind FDIC standing behind the curtain to make everything happen with Ginger, Diane, Bobby, the whole crew that make that happen. It's an honor and a privilege to be able to work with those great folks. Also check out Fire Engineering books and videos, a great opportunity to pick up some of the best of the best information that's out there by up-to-date authors and new editions that have come out, just a great opportunity for that. And again, we look forward to having you on another edition of Fire and Training. Again, this is an introductory show to what's going to happen in the future. I wanted to get it out there. I wanted to kind of get you tasted for it. I will say that I have put in to do this as a four-hour pre-conference at FDIC. We'll see if that gets picked up. I'm excited about it. I look forward to having some good conversation with folks. But we want you to be involved in the show. And that's what's important. Many of you bring a wealth of knowledge and a wealth of experience to the topics we're talking about. And we truly want you to be engaged in the conversations as we're having them live so that it helps benefit the other folks that come back and listen to this program at a later date. For tonight, we're going to wrap it up early. A lot going on. If you're out there in the heat across the United States right now, please stay safe. There's a heat advisory in many, many areas. Heat indexes of going above 110 degrees. We've experienced that for the last 3 days where I'm at. But, you know, be safe. Be safe in all you do. And, again, I want to say that Fire and Training is dedicated to the men and women out on the street doing their job 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days of the year, and making sure that we give them the right information and the right knowledge so that they have the ability to go home at the end of the tour, at the end of the call. We know that, you know, that is so critical. We look forward to seeing you on another edition of Fire and Training as we start talking about resort emergency response and fire ground operations. The first one we're going to kick off is coastal. We're going to kick off with the coastal, and we're going to be specific, and we're going to kick off with the Atlantic coast and some of the challenges that we have in our resorts along our beaches and along some of our inland areas along where there's lakes, there's rivers, and specifically in the region, some golf courses as well, the challenge. So we're going to start off on the East Coast, and we're going to work our way around the United States, and then we're going to talk about the world in some of the configurations that we know exist in different parts of the world. As we go along, please be involved. And again, thank you for taking the opportunity to tune in to Fire and Training with Doug Klein. I'm your host. Look forward to seeing you on another edition of this program. Till then, stay safe, train hard, train often, and make sure that everyone goes home.